Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
For your minimum daily adult requirements of sanity.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Back in 1944, the New York Times asked the Vice President of the United States, Henry Wallace, to define fascism and asked the question, are there fascists among us? Henry Wallace in the New York Times wrote, yes. The really dangerous American fascists are not those who are hooked up directly or indirectly with the Axis. The FBI has its finger on those. The dangerous American fascist is the man who wants to do in the United States in an American way what Hitler did in Germany in a Prussian way. The American fascist would prefer not to use violence. His method is to poison the channels of public information. With a fascist, the problem is never how best to present the truth to the public, but how best to use the news to deceive the public into giving the fascist and his group more money and more power. An American fascist is one who, in case of conflict, puts money and power ahead of human beings. They are patriotic in time of war because it is in their financial interest to be so. But in time of peace, they follow power and the dollar wherever it will lead. Still another danger is represented by those who pay lip service to democracy and the common welfare in their insatiable greed for money and the power which gives it. Which it gives, do not hesitate surreptitiously to evade the laws designed to safeguard the public from monopolistic extortion. Fascism, the merger of state and business enterprises, as I believe it was Giovanni Gentile, writing as Mussolini wrote for the Encyclopedia Italiana back in the 1930s. Jonah Goldberg is on the line with us. His website, nationalreviewonline.com. He is a contributing editor to the National Review and the author of a new book, Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left, From Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning. Jonah, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I found your book fascinating. I have to say. First of all, you started out by saying, by quoting a debate about, you know, what is fascism, and essentially saying that you didn't know what fascism was. And I couldn't.
No, I didn't say that. And a lot of left wing bloggers keep saying I said that. I said that the leading academics have yet to be able to define what fascism was.
Yes.
I offer my own definition of what fascism was in the book. It's just simply not true that I don't know what it.
Perhaps I missed it then. What is your definition of fascism?
I say it's essentially. I mean, I have a longer one in the book, but I say it's essentially it's a religious impulse wrongly applied to politics, which says that we should have a cult of unity overseen by the state, where the entire society has to move in the same direction at all times.
You realize that Benito Mussolini invented the word fascism.
I do realize that. That's another thing where I've been...
Why not go with his definition? I mean, he dissolved Parliament and replaced the elected officials of Parliament with people representing the largest corporations in each one of the counties in Italy.
No, I don't think you know what the corporations were. The corporations included was essentially Mussolini's fascism, the corporatism, which is, you know, people like RFK, you know, RFK Jr. continually misunderstand what the corporations were in Mussolini's Italy. They weren't corporations like AT&T and IBM necessarily. They were syndicalists, where unions and labor were brought in to work alongside business management and the like. It was, in many ways, the associationalism that we saw under the New Deal, although it was more extreme in Italy.
I beg your pardon? You're saying that the unions were running the corporations in fascist Italy? It was union leaders who were being put to death
international communists. There weren't a lot of people being put to death in fascist Italy, by the way. The best numbers are around less than 20.
No, Mussolini didn't have the death camps that Hitler did, but the fascists, you know, one of the very first groups that they went after was organized labor.
They were syndicalists, though. I mean, there is no getting around the fact.
What is a syndicalist?
Look, syndicalism was the belief that all sectors of society should work together, all sectors of the economy should work together in terms of planning and coordination. Yes, of course, there were political enemies who were more aligned with international communism or who were opponents of fascism. You know, it was a police state. But I don't know that any serious historian doesn't argue that labor wasn't brought in. I mean, if you read the planks that got the fascists elected, labor was a hugely important part of European syndicalism. Gives rise to the corporatism of Italian fascism.
Well, Italian fascism, like much fascism in Europe, Mussolini's, Hitler's, Franco's, Franco, who was praised very heavily by, you know, your mentor, William F. Buckley Jr., all rose out of economic disaster, after World War One. The fact that working people were fooled by that and thought that this might be the way. I mean, you had fascists in America. You had people in the United States, arguing in favor of fascism. At the same time, you had people in the United States arguing in favor of a Soviet-style communism.
You did. It's funny.
Franklin Roosevelt walked us right down the middle between those two groups.
Yes, but to
portray fascism as somehow conflated with liberalism, and then conflate liberalism with the totalitarianism of the Soviet Union seems to me like you're just wildly overreaching here.
Yeah, I don't think you've actually read my book, but it's interesting when you begin your discussion and you're talking about how fascism, which is this classic Marxist trope, that fascism is the merger of business and government. And there's some truth to that, to be
well,
sure.
Well, it's the quotation from Mussolini. It's the quotation from Gentile.
I understand that it comes, that Mussolini
says this is how they define it.
And there's a lot of truth to it. But the American progressives, Herbert Croly, the founder of the New Republic, the author of The Promise of American Life, the quintessential, indispensable man of American progressivism, that is precisely what he called for. That is precisely what the Wilsonites called for. It's precisely what TR and all the other progressives called for. It was to move away from the idea of laissez-faire capitalism and having competition and more towards the area of coordination between business and government.
No, they wanted to move away from laissez-faire capitalism because laissez-faire capitalism is itself anti-competitive. It is monopolistic.
No, of course it's not.
Herbert
Croly was
without regulation of laissez-faire capitalism, you have monopoly. That's why they came up with the game in 1917.
I'm afraid you don't know the economic history here. Herbert Croly was against breaking up the trusts. He wanted to keep the trusts large and enslave them to government purposes. If you read the Clarence Darrow report on the effects of the New Deal, it was incontestable that the New Deal ended up helping the biggest corporations against the small vendors, the middlemen, the independents. It was the merging of big business and big government for planning. And that's what we have in many respects today, where you have liberals and liberal Republicans trying to use corporations as government by proxy, use them to provide health care, make them too big to fail.
So everyone, the liberals who are calling for single-payer health care insurance and the destruction, essentially, of the healthcare industry are somehow fascists because they want to join the healthcare corporations, the people like William McGuire, who made $1.7 billion as CEO of United Health.
I am saying that. I am saying that.
That's incoherent.
That if you want to look at when this idea that somehow, first of all, the idea that.
Listen, you say in your book, tobacco companies themselves, I'm quoting from your book, tobacco companies themselves have been forced to ritualistically and expensively denounce their own product. Free association of smokers has been outlawed in much of America.
That's right.
You cite this as an example of fascism. You go on to say vegetarianism, public health, and animal rights were merely different facets of the obsession with the organic order that pervaded the German fascist mind then and the liberal fascist mind now.
You're going to have the rest of your show to read from my book in selective ways.
No, actually, I'm not going to do that. I don't trash people when they're not around to defend themselves.
If you want me to answer your question, the tobacco thing is a perfect example of what I am talking about. You now have, across this country, state governments, led by their attorneys general, working in collusion to beat up on small independent tobacco companies and to help large cigarette companies maintain their profit margins.
What about the 500,000 Americans who die every year from tobacco? Tobacco is the only product, when used as directed, that causes death.
I've heard that talking point for 15 years, and I don't really dispute it. My point is, if we're going to be talking about it,
then why not regulate it?
If we're going to be talking about economics, the result of, to answer your question, the result of what we're looking at is we're watching government and business work together for the benefit of the tobacco companies. Now, I would assume you, as a good liberal who hates tobacco and all the rest, wouldn't like the idea that government needs tobacco revenues to pay for health care, to pay for education, and therefore is propping up cigarette sales across this country.
No, I think it's a terrible, I agree with you on that.
Okay, well, that's a bad
it makes
thing.
absolutely no sense. But that's not what we're talking about. What you're arguing in your book is that passing laws that prevent people from being exposed to secondhand smoke is, and that the tobacco companies have to go out and say, hey, you know, our product will kill you, by the way, that is somehow fascist.
Yeah,
that's the argument you're making. You want to stick around and continue this conversation for a few minutes?
I got another interview.
All righty. Well, good luck. Jonah Goldberg, his book, National Review Online, and the website, his book, Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left from Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning. 16 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. We are going to, at the top of the next hour, we're going to get into, in some depth, what's going on today, the primary election in Michigan, and what's going on there. We've got a caucus coming up in Nevada. Today is the actual birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. We want to hear a little clip from him. As I mentioned to Jonah Goldberg, I don't trash people when they're not on the air and they're not here to defend themselves. So we're going to let his words speak for himself. Check out his book, Liberal Fascism. Instead, I want to go back to Henry Wallace, Vice President of the United States, just to kind of close this thing. You know, who are the fascists? What is fascism? And should America be concerned about such a thing? Is this even a word we should still use? And Henry Wallace, back in 1944, when the New York Times, he was Vice President of the United States, the New York Times came to him and said, you know, there's all this concern about fascism. Are there fascists in America? Who are they? How do we identify them? And what should we do about fascism in the United States? And Henry Wallace wrote a long op-ed piece for the New York Times. And in it, he talked about how the American fascists would have to lie to the people in order to gain control. He said their newspapers and propaganda carefully cultivate every fissure of disunity, every crack in the common front against fascism. They use every opportunity to impugn democracy. He added, they claim to be super patriots, but they would destroy every liberty guaranteed by the Constitution. They demand free enterprise, but are the spokesman for monopoly and self-interest, invested interest. Their final objective, toward which all their deceit is directed, is to capture political power so that using the power of the state and the power of the market simultaneously, they may keep the common man in eternal subjection. Now, how a person can argue that, quote, the left in the United States, which is actually the middle in the United States, is fascist, I find, you know, rather startling. And I did spend a fair amount of time with Jonah's book. We had on this program, 6 months ago, something like that, thereabouts, the head of the Communist Party, the United States of America. I said, you want the left? We'll put the left on. And the guy from CPUSA comes on, it was about a year ago, and he comes on, and I said, you know, so economically, what should we do in the United States? He says, well, you know, we should nationalize all the businesses. And all the trade unions should become one giant union. Let it all be the people. In other words, turn the United States into the Soviet Union. That's the left. That left is maybe 1,000 people in this country. I mean, that left is dead. And then you've got the Reich. You've got the people who believe that monopoly is a good thing, that corporations should get as big as they can and as big as they want. It's a largely American phenomenon. Right now you've got Europe attacking Microsoft, for example, for trust, for monopoly violations. But this laissez-faire, unregulated, unrestrained capitalism, it used to be called serfdom. I mean, the creation of serfdom. I mean, The bottom line here is that fascism, or whatever you want to call it, is very much a creature of the right. It is so absolutely much a creature of the right. And we're seeing it played out, the authoritarianism and the bring corporations in and the, we need 30 more Blackwaters over in Iraq. Let's totally privatize the country. You have in Iraq 50% unemployment rate. Well, that's just fine, right? As long as the big corporations are making out, just Bush going around shaking hands with dictators around the world where they're bringing in slave labor from there. Oh, that's just fine. You have Reverend Moon buying the Washington Times and that becoming this incredibly influential newspaper in the United States. That's just fine. Probably the leading cheerleader for war in the world, one of the people with the most blood on his hands. Buying up now the Wall Street Journal, buying up media all over the world, owning Fox News and whatnot, and promoting the merger of corporate activity and government activity. This, frankly, I think this is something for us to worry about. And maybe it is time for, as Jonah Goldberg has done, I think incorrectly, but nonetheless as he has done, to bring the word fascism back into our lexicon, back into the mainstream, to start discussing again, well, what does this mean? Where is the risk of fascism in the United States? And have a reasonable conversation about it. And go back to the words of Henry Wallace, the Vice President of the United States in 1944, warning us explicitly. Their final objective, toward which all their deceit is directed, is to capture political power. I mean, we've gone from fewer than 100 lobbyists in the White House at the time Jack Kennedy was president to over 30,000, not in the White House, in Congress, roaming the halls of Congress, to capture political power so that using the power of the state and the power of the market simultaneously, they may keep the common man in eternal subjection. Maybe we're there already.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Yes, the old fascists.
So, all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains?
Yes. We'll see how it all shakes out. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Carolyn, Mesa, Arizona. Carol, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Forgive me. I know you don't usually trash people when they're not there to defend themselves, but ever since the Monica Lewinsky thing, I've thought of him as Judas Gold Digger, son of Lucifer Gold Digger.
Oh, come on. That's a cheap shot, Carolyn.
Basically, what I really called about is what you kind of covered. The description you read of corporations and ruling, they're the way they want to rule. And it's more like, as far as I'm concerned, the neocons than any leftists of any sort.
Well, that's the opinion that I would hold, is that, you know, if you want to define fascism, it's a phenomena of the right. And Jonah Goldberg is trying to redefine it as a phenomena of the left and saying that Woodrow Wilson was a fascist. Well, you know, Wilson did have his Alien Sedition Acts, and he did throw Eugene Debs in prison. There was some authoritarianism there. I wouldn't deny that. Franklin Roosevelt put the Japanese Americans in prison and internment camps. That was wrong. I'm not sure that makes these guys fascists, but certainly these are condemnable actions. But fascism is this huge, systemic, frankly, part of the history of the right. I don't know how to say it beyond that. Julie in Edison, New Jersey. Hey, Julie.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. I like your book, Cracking the Code.
I think
I just bought also Losing Our Democracy, Marx's book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it looks like it's a solution for the problem he's talking about, your book is, you know, how to win hearts and change minds and restore America's original vision. That's what we should look for. Anyway, I want to talk about fascism. Mm-hmm. I think fascism has also another characteristic, such as invading other countries. You know, Hitler went all the way to Russia, while Mussolini went to Ethiopia, and he killed as much as he killed the Jewish people, 5.5 million people in Ethiopia.
Yeah, the definition that was in the American, I forget, I think it was American Heritage Dictionary. I've quoted it a number of times in op-eds that I've written for many years. Before the dictionary company was bought out by a big transnational, was that fascism was the merger of state and business interests combined with belligerent nationalism. And that's what you're talking about, is that belligerent nationalism. And I think you're spot on and absolutely right. Julie, thank you very much for sharing that with us. Dave in Seattle. Hey, Dave.
Hey, I think belligerent nationalism, the thing about fascism is that it combines economic and, if you will, moral power interests with the military. And that really is the defining characteristic of fascism. The fascisti was the bundling of all those things, with, of course, Benito Mussolini, who was a military leader.
Right.
And syndicalism, what the guy was doing, and, you know, with your book, Cracking the Code, you should be interested in this, is what he's doing is using a word, syndicalism, that people don't really know what it means anymore, and hoping that people won't actually look, at which they probably won't, this being America, at who syndicalists actually were. Actually, there's a very one of the biggest syndicalist organizations in the world was the IWW, the Wobblies here in America.
Yeah.
Right. And they were anti-war, all about people getting together and just the workers of a corporation or a mill or a farm or whatever, just being entitled to and running the entitled to the profits.
I always thought that syndicalism could be boiled down to, say, worker-owned businesses.
Exactly. That's exactly what syndicalism.
I mean, that was my understanding of it, and I don't see what that has to do with fascism.
I'll explain it to you real quick. What Goldberg is doing is using the early history of a few Italian fascists who were syndicalists before they became fascists. Just about the other 65% were thrown out of the country or killed or lost their citizenship or that
right.
kind of thing.
To portray all American unionists as syndicalists and therefore as fascists.
Exactly.
It's a bit of a leap, yeah.
It's bizarre. But,
yeah, okay.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear from you. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Thanks, Tom. An example of who will flourish with single-payer health care?
Yep.
Artists. I would rather have 8,000 dueling orchestras than 8,000 dueling armies. And there's a program on Nobel Peace Prize on PBS. A Nobel Peace concert was awesome.
Good.
Thanks,
well, thank you, Dave. A little off topic here, but Jason in Seattle. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Tom. Good to speak with you. I just have a thought here, a short thought that goes along with what you're saying. I found it on bainquote.com, and it says, the means of defense against foreign danger historically have become the instruments of tyranny at home. And that was James Madison that said that. And it just seems like it goes along so much with what's going on today. We're saber-rattling about all these foreign enemies, and we're losing our civil rights at the same time. Thanks.
Yeah, and you're welcome, and thanks, Jason, for pointing that out. And you go back and you look at history. I wrote a book called We the People. It's actually a comic book. It's like a 130-page comic book, but I think it's one of the very best of the American history books that I've written. And, you know, for adults entirely. I mean, you know, kids can read it, but it's really a book for adults. And in it, I point out, I trace that, you know, basically where that Madison quote came from. You had the second president of the United States, the first conservative president of the United States, John Adams, and he was using fear, the fear of the French in this case. He sent over a delegation to France, three guys, one of them, as I recall, was John Marshall, who was later appointed to the Supreme Court by John Adams. But in any case, he sent three guys over to France. They were approached in the middle of the night by a guy who said, I can help get you some political influence if you'll just give me a bribe. These guys were probably just common criminals. We still, you know, to this day, history does not know. John Adams referred to them as Mr. X, Mr. Y, and Mr. Z, and turned this into a huge thing in the newspaper. They called it the XYZ Affair, and he was like, you know, about how the French are trying to control American foreign policy, and they're trying to bribe us, and they represent a threat to us, and we need to have more. And therefore, we have to have the Alien Sedition Acts, and we have to find the traitors among us and those people who might be conspiring with the French. And he used this to throw 20 different newspaper editors, including the grandson of Benjamin Franklin Bach, who published a newspaper called The Aurora, which supported Thomas Jefferson, who was John Adams' bitter and sworn enemy and vice president at that time, in jail, threw Ben Franklin's grandson in prison for saying that John Adams was, quote, old, toothless, querulous, and balding. That's the quote that got him thrown in prison. And James Madison was absolutely right. The you know, ginning up fear of foreign enemies is one of the classic tools of tyranny that has been used in the United States as well as everywhere else. Denny in Wenatchee, Washington. Hey, Denny, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. You know, I'm cooled off about Mr. Goldberg, thanks to you and your reasonable response to him. But I did want to mention something. You were talking about the media and how they're being just gobbled up by a few people, and they all are of the right persuasion. You know, I feel anymore that I'm wondering if it's too late. You know, even our Democratic primaries, you know, we have the two people that have raised and spent the most money. They're the only thing anybody talks about. It seems the race is over. You know, I just feel like I don't know what to do anymore.
It's like John Edwards in Nevada. John Edwards is within the margin of error, equal with Obama and Hillary, and yet Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton, and yet he was virtually invisible in all the talk shows, all the big corporate talk shows yesterday.
Yeah, exactly, and I saw that poll, and I think it was out of Reno, that it's a dead heat. You hear nothing about that.
Yeah.
Nothing,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. And there, you know, there's an article recently in the McClatchy papers suggesting that the one guy that corporate America really seriously fears, because he actually has a very serious chance of becoming president of the United States, and he is calling them out. The one guy that corporate America fears is John Edwards.
Absolutely. And I send him money, and I hope other people will, too, because it's the only way I see to start getting out of this hole, if we can.
Yeah.
And thank you for your show, Tom. And I really like the way that you interviewed Mr. Goldberg, even though I'm not going to say anything about it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Denny.
I'm going to respect your wishes.
Thank you. I appreciate it and appreciate your kind words. Cindy in Orange County, California. Hey, Cindy, about a minute before we've got to take a break here.
Hi. I just want to say I'm not surprised at his mushy logic, because ever since the LA Times has been taken over by the Tribune Company, Goldberg's editorials are just... they're just painfully ridiculous.
That's your perspective. I would suspect that he and his supporters would suggest that he's, you know, a brilliant writer. He does get around. He is well published.
Well, there are some really brilliant conservative writers, but the logic and it's just painfully like childish. I understand you don't want to say anything because he's not there, but it's just I just keep thinking, why am I buying this paper?
Yeah, the LA Times. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, which takes us back. Thank you, Cindy. Takes us back to, you know, why is it that that cities of over a million all across America, in particular, don't have 2, 3, 4, 5 newspapers like they did for about 200 years throughout the history of this country until Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Hey, good. Quiet, little Red Riding Hood. Good, you're everything that a big bad wolf would want.
Listen to me!
Oh! Little Red Riding Hood, I don't think even big girls should go walking in these spooky old woods alone.
Oh! the Wolves are having a bit of a challenge here. This from the Defenders of Wildlife news release. A ranch hand working in the Adobe Slash Ranch in New Mexico abandoned a pregnant cow that was about to give birth in an area wolves were known to inhabit. In order to lure the wolves into attacking the livestock to provide an excuse for then killing the wolves. This baiting incident resulted in the lethal removal of the Durango pack's alpha female, which can destroy a wolf pack. The Mexican gray wolf once roamed throughout the Southwest, but by the early 1970s, the lobo had been almost completely exterminated. In 1976, it was listed as an endangered species. In 1998, the U.S. Forest Service reintroduced three family groups of wolves into the Apache National Forest in eastern Arizona. There are 60 wolves in the wild today now, and the ranchers are going after them. So Little Red Riding Hood's not the one who's got something to worry about. 866-303-2270, our number. Steve in San Diego. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you tend to have all these right-wingers on, and I kind of, you know, work my way through it. But listening to Goldberg, I think we're missing the point here. I mean, we have to ask the question is, why is he making this argument that liberals are fascists?
And I think it's I think they're trying to inure us to the word.
I think he's using a typical fascist tactic, and we call it the pot kettle black attack.
Right.
They tend to do this all the time, where they know. I mean, Goldberg knows that the Republican Party is turning this country into a fascist state. But to get change the subject and to put us on the defensive, he accuses us of what he does.
Right, and by doing that, you insulate yourself from attacks of doing that when they come back and when people come back and say, aha, you know, no, you guys are the fascists. No, wait a minute, sure. We just called you the fascists. You're absolutely right, Steve. In my humble opinion, you're absolutely right. Time will tell. Chris in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Chris.
How you doing? Hey, I had a question concerning fascism here. On on either side of the speaker's podium is a symbol of a fasci. And it's a hatchet head with a bundle of sticks around it.
Right.
Why do they use such symbolism there? Because I know that that's a symbol for fascism.
Yeah, the fasce is the symbol, and this by the way predates World War II or Mussolini or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mussolini, the fasce is a bundle of sticks with a rope around it. And then an axe stuck in the top of it. And
yeah. And
the concept is that a single stick can be broken, but a bundle of sticks cannot be broken. And that bundle of sticks with the rope around it and the axe in it was the symbol of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And so, Mussolini adopted it. And the reason why it's on the speaker's podium or bench or whatever, it's in the Senate, is simply because it's – hang on. Excuse me. I had to sneeze there. Thank you. Is because, you know, when they were decorating the Senate, they were coming up with symbols of historic republics. You know, the United States is a republic, where and Rome arguably at certain times in its history was a republic. And so,
right.
You know, it's a decoration. It's not any kind of political statement or anything.
Okay,
and
I was always.
It's been there for 100 years. I've actually seen websites and books and things where see, look at this. This is proof. You know, these guys were plotting this thing even before Hitler was born. No, I'm sorry. You know, there's Greek mythology and symbology.
Right.
There's Roman symbology. You know, it's art.
Even though it's art, it still has certain connotations to certain people. So.
Yeah, maybe we should reconsider it being there. I mean, you know, that's a whole other thing. But, you know, frankly, I think the time to reconsider it being there would have been after World War II. But,
right.
But at least that's my understanding of it. I may stand corrected. I often am. But that's pretty much my understanding of where we're at with that, Chris. Thanks a lot for the call. John in San Francisco. Hey, John, what's up?
Morning, Tom. You know, the overemphasis on fascism, I think, is a distraction, because let's not forget that it was a liberal Democrat who dropped two atomic bombs on two cities in Japan in defiance of all their attempts to surrender, which we deliberately ignored. Now, are you going to say that anything that Italy did was comparable to the interventions under Woodrow Wilson? Franklin Roosevelt was...
It was Harry Truman who dropped the bombs, not Woodrow Wilson.
Right, but Franklin Roosevelt was Secretary of the Navy under Woodrow Wilson. When, if you read Turning the Tide by Professor Chomsky, he talks about all the atrocities in Nicaragua, in the Dominican Republic, in Haiti, which the Secretary of the Navy would have to have been involved in. So how could Franklin Roosevelt set moral judgment on what any other country did when he participated in repressing the Caribbean and Central America?
John, you're not going to hear an argument from me that the United States has a checkered... Let me finish my sentence.
Okay,
the United States has a checkered past. I mean, we had slaves in this country. As I pointed out much earlier, Franklin Roosevelt interred the Japanese, Woodrow Wilson, the Democratic president during World War I, threw Eugene Debs in jail for speaking out. He passed the Alien Sedition Acts. There is a long history in this country of using government force to defend corporate activity, and there are no presidents, frankly, that I think that are lacking in guilt on that regard.
Well, then
my hope is that we will move toward our highest ideals rather than wallowing in and continuously revisiting our past failures.
At the same time, though, I think that we also need not to sit in judgment on other countries who have only done what we did on a smaller scale.
So what Mussolini did is just fine with you?
No, but I think that you need to go after the greater offender, not the lesser offender. We need to clean up our own house before we start going after what other countries have done.
Yeah, I think somewhere between our positions, John, there's some light and some reality. I mean, I agree that we need to clean up our own house, and I think that at the same time we can condemn other countries that are behaving in a fascistic fashion or an anti-democratic fashion or like empire. And we're seeing that. I mean, obviously the United States is doing it. Look at Iraq, among others. We're doing it all over the world, but there are other countries that are as well. Frankly, all of it should be condemned, and some of the truth tellers. This is the big problem the Republican Party has with Ron Paul, as he'll raise these issues. 57 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. The smart people get their news.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The primary in Michigan is happening today. And still is interesting ongoing debate about exactly what that, you know, how should folks in Michigan be voting? There's been a strong pitch by the Kucinich folks, since he's on the ballot, vote for him. There's obviously a pitch by the Hillary folks, she's on the ballot, vote for her. There's a pitch for the we're not in favor of Hillary, and we would like to see Barack Obama or John Edwards walking away with the nomination. Don't think that Dennis Kucinich is going to get it, so vote uncommitted. Do not vote write-in. That will kill your ballot. And then, of course, there's the Daily Kos stuff is still floating around. I'm over at the MichiganLiberal.com blog, and some interesting comments and conversations over there. In particular, though, there's this one ad, and this captures the argument. We talked about this yesterday, and I'm not supporting this. I raised it yesterday. I thought this is interesting. This is really interesting. This is Marcos's, of Daily Kos, Marcos's suggestion. And then we heard from a bunch of Democrats in Michigan who were saying, "Oh, please don't do that." But you have to hear this, even though you shouldn't do it, because this is so cool. This is an ad. It's a YouTube ad. It runs about a minute. It starts out the Mitt. Michigan is, if you look at Michigan on a map, it looks kind of like a hand, sort of like Mitt, right? And his real name is Willard. I don't know, maybe this, he grew up in Michigan just like I did. And I don't know if he was born in Michigan like I was, but we both grew up in Michigan. His dad was the governor of Michigan. I remember when his dad was the governor of Michigan. I remember when his dad went over to Vietnam and came back and said that he'd been brainwashed by the military trying to get him to support the war. So anyhow, this ad...
Throughout history, Michigan got screwed. From the glaciers to the Treaty of Ghent to globalization... Outside forces have written Michigan's history for her. January 15th, America's mitten can hit back. Mitt Romney is the kind of candidate Michigan Democrats need right now. He's a rich man who will spend millions of his own money on attack ads.
McCain.
And then they quote some of the attack ads. Here's one. McCain supported this year's amnesty bill, and they show an actual photo of the ad.
Supported this year's amnesty bill.
And then they've got, you know, picture of Mitt Romney, tough on drugs like meth, never pardoned a criminal, and then they go to an attack ad against Huckabee.
1,033 pardons and commutations.
There is no greater...
And then here's John McCain, a photo of John McCain. Again, an attack ad from Romney says, let every illegal immigrant stay.
...voice against the Republican candidates than this Republican candidate. If he loses Michigan, he may be done. Michigan, do you want this primary season to be over? Or do you want this primary season to be hilarious? If you can't see yourself voting for Romney in 08, pick a different Romney. Think of Romney from 94.
I will preserve and protect a woman's right to choose.
Romney in 02.
We do have tough gun laws in Massachusetts. I support them.
Or Romney in 06.
My pleasure to introduce my collaborator and friend, Senator Edward Kennedy. Senator?
Catch this guy on the right day, and he's Jay Frickin' Guevara. But best of all, he's rich, desperate, and lashing out like a drunken frat boy. Michigan, you can keep this circular firing squad of jerkos alive. Democrats, vote Romney on the 15th. They may call it underhanded, but it's time for America's mitten to take off the gloves. I'm some dude you've never heard of, and I approve this message.
There you go. That's the piece over. Yeah, the blog, MichiganLiberal.com is the blog, I think by and large they're taking the position, although I'm not sure that there's an official position to the blog, that voting uncommitted is the way to go. And frankly, that's the way that I would be going. But it's an interesting one. And again, I'd like to hear from some of our Michigan listeners. Jim in Grand Rapids, listening to WTKG. Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to relate to your last two subjects, the current one and the last one. Mm-hmm. First of all, I am voting in the primary. I'm going to vote for Kucinich basically because I just want to vote my conscience and the way I agree with everything he's talking about.
Well, that's an excellent reason to vote for Dennis Kucinich.
And then Mitt Romney, you know, he's touting the same mantra that they always do, you know, cut taxes and remove regulations here in Michigan to stimulate the economy. And I would like to just see a more emphasis, at least from the people on the left or Democrats, to say that system does not work. It's a failed policy. And just like your last guest, you know, I think his ultimate goal is to push that system. And it just doesn't work. It hasn't worked for the last 25 plus years.
But see, here's the problem. There are some who suggest, and I notice we have a call from a Hillary supporter. We'll go to her next, in fact. That there are some who suggest that system is what you're going to end up with, or at least, you know, the kind of corporate merger with state, that a less than progressive candidate, let's say, is what you will end up with if Hillary Clinton is the president. And, you know, I
don't disagree with that either.
Yeah, so if you vote uncommitted, then you may end up with Barack Obama or John Edwards. Although in yesterday's New York Times, Paul Krugman made a very, you know, strong argument that Barack Obama is no progressive either, that his arguments, his financial stimulus program basically is one that will benefit Wall Street and sounds very Republican.
I've seen some of that too. I don't see a lot of the negative things about Obama, but, you know, he's not really for a single-payer healthcare system some of the other more progressive ideas. And to me, everybody's been saying, you know, Kucinich or Edwards or whoever is the most populous at the time, doesn't have a chance to win. But if we keep voting strategically, those people will never have a chance to win.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And actually, if you look at the polls in Nevada, you wouldn't know this if you watched corporate television yesterday and all the talking heads and all the talk shows. But it's a dead heat between Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards right now in the Nevada primary. I mean, it's just an absolute dead heat. And Dennis Kucinich has now been reinstated in the debates that are coming up. So, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Adrian in Dearborn, Michigan. Adrian, you're going to vote for Hillary today.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a great admirer of yours. I just want to let you know that I'm 54 years old. I'm college educated from Dearborn, Michigan. And also, I drink wine. And so
that's
I just
what they're for?
I love Martin Luther King. And however, I was 15 when the riots in 68 came in Detroit, and I was scared. I didn't understand it. I didn't meet my first black person until I got into college, and it was the women's white movement that moved everything, that just started everything, and that's by its very nature, I was very upset when they trashed Hillary when she was the first lady. And just by my, I was one of the first police patrol officers in Michigan in the 70s. And just by my very nature, I have to vote Hillary. However, I wouldn't be adverse to Obama or Edwards because of we're all the same. We all want the same thing.
Yeah, the Democrats, by and large, you're absolutely right, Adrian. Thank you for sharing that with us. Democrats, broadly speaking, are on the same page, and perhaps the most important page where I think most of the Democrats are going to be on the same page is deciding who the next nominee for the Supreme Court is going to be. Because do not kid yourself, in the next 4 to 8 years, there are going to be at least two and arguably more openings on the Supreme Court, and they will change the nature of this country for at least a generation, substantially. Greg in Livonia, Michigan. Hey, Greg.
Hi, Tom. Honored to speak to you. And I just wanted
Thanks
to let
calling.
You know that I'm a supporter of Dennis Kucinich, and I voted for him today.
Good.
And
good
a couple of curious developments concerning that. One is that Dennis Kucinich is at the top of the Michigan ballot, and Hillary is underneath him. But you wouldn't know it to hear the report from CNN, because CNN says that Hillary is the only Democrat on the ballot in Michigan today. And that's on this station that they cite that.
Well, that's so strange. I mean, I've seen the ballot, and Chris Dodd is on the ballot as well.
Yes, he is.
Although
he's no
longer running. But, I mean, you know, the two people who are actually running are Dennis Kucinich and Hillary Clinton.
Yes. So. And secondarily, a second topic quite quickly here is it dovetails into the topic delved into the previous hour. I'm a union member. I have the day off today because I went out to the polls to fight the RTW people, the right to workers that were supposedly out there. I guess really classic fascists, really. I received my union paper this month, and in there they have an in memoriam article to a gentleman named Irving Bluestone, who is a passionate unionist.
Mm-hmm.
He became a passionate unionist because he said that unionism is the best antidote to fascism.
Yeah, well said. Greg, thank you very much. Very well said. And as the weekend approaches, I mean, you hear it's Tuesday, but, you know, when the weekend comes, remember, things like, you know, the 40-hour work week, the weekend, the health care, all brought to you courtesy of unions. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. The true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
This is what happens when democracy gets hijacked by crazies like Ronald Reagan and the people who have followed him for these last 26 years. Democrats as well, a few. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you by our sponsors. Listener-supported radio by you, our listeners. Listening for sponsors you can support and letting them know that you're listening, using and buying their products. As well as brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for the quality, for quality health, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Big headline up at the top of the New York Times right now. Citibank posts $9.83 billion loss, will cut jobs. Yeah, the economy is just fine. These Republicans, they really know how to run an economy. Everything is just great. Bob in Detroit. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hey, lifelong union member, retired auto worker, lifelong lefty, and a first-time caller on your show. Something very scary happened yesterday. John McCain was at the auto show in Detroit shaking hands.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to him looked just like his Siamese twin was Joe Lieberman. I would bet my next Social Security check that Joe Lieberman is going to be his running mate. And that's scary.
That makes perfect sense.
he scared me to death when he was with Al Gore, but I voted Democratic anyway. But I, this is.
Yeah, a McCain-Lieberman ticket would really give a Hillary Clinton anybody ticket, or for that matter, Barack Obama anybody ticket, a run for their money.
I've been listening to the show hoping somebody would talk about it, but only people in Detroit saw it.
So Joe Lieberman is following John McCain around, part of his roadshow now.
They were elbow to elbow, elbow like they were Siamese twins.
Amazing, amazing. Thanks for the heads up, Bob.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Yep.
Doreen in the Queens, New York. Hey, Doreen.
How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I'm a Kucinich supporter here in Queens, a volunteer, and I'm listening to your callers, and a lot of them are Kucinich supporters from Michigan, and I feel like they have the golden opportunity to, number one, vote for who they want to vote for and get Kucinich some needed exposure on the news, because if he does well, they're going to have to acknowledge it. They're going to have to. I mean, they won't be able to not acknowledge it because he is on the ballot. And the next item of discussion is that he won, you know, the right to be in the debate in Nevada. And now people that support Kucinich everywhere who are listening should urge their friends who don't know who Kucinich is to watch that debate so they know who they have to choose from, because there are other candidates there other than Obama and Hillary and Edwards, and that's it. We only have the three, but we really have a fourth that nobody knows about.
Do you seriously think, Doreen, that there's a chance that Dennis Kucinich could end up the nominee of the party?
I don't think he could become the nominee, but I believe that what he
I understand his positions, and I support them, but if he can't become the nominee of the party, and John Edwards, who is the guy who is coming right out and saying that he's going to take on corporate America, the same kind of message that Dennis Kucinich has been running on, and versus Barack Obama, who says, oh, the Social Security Trust Fund's going to go broke, you know, we ought to privatize Social Security, or implies that Hillary Clinton, you know, used to be on the board of Walmart, things like that. It seems to me that those of us who want a truly progressive candidate on the Democratic ticket should be working for the Edwards candidacy. As much as we all appreciate Dennis Kucinich's participation and his voice, what's your take on that? As a Kucinich supporter, who doesn't think that he'll be the nominee?
Well, I believe that having him in the debates and having him keep repeating what he believes, I think those ideas, people will hear them, and it'll force the other candidates to step up and be much more elaborate on what they believe changes and the things that they're for, because he comes right there and says it.
No, I agree with you on the debates, and that's, you know, as I said, that's one of the reasons why I sent money to the Kucinich campaign, and why,
right,
you know, I want Dennis in there. I want his voice heard. I think his voice is a very important voice. When it gets down to the voting, though, and for example, today in Michigan, the voting in Michigan, the scenario that I'm concerned that I would not want to see happen, frankly, is that we end up on the Democratic side with the least progressive candidate because the two most progressive candidates are competing with each other.
That could happen. However, I think that maybe the progressive candidates could force the other two, especially Hillary. I think that Hillary might be smarter and also might be able to articulate it better and make those things happen and say, I need the progressive votes, because there are a lot of us.
I'll tell you, Doreen, the conventional wisdom within the Democratic Party, I can't speak for the Hillary Clinton camp, obviously, but the conventional wisdom within the party is that progressives will vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is. We can take their vote for granted. And so, you know, they may say things during the debates, but I'd like to have an actual candidate who's a progressive, personally. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Program. By the way, you can call our comment line whether you agree, disagree, or just want to sound off. The number's over on our website at tomhartman.com. If you can't write real fast, but the number is 202-536-5306. It's a recorded line. This isn't the on-air line, so if you just... And particularly for you conservatives who would like to give me a piece of your mind, here's your opportunity. Keep it under 30 seconds because your comments might make it on the air. 202-536-5306. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Sheila in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Sheila.
Hi there, Tom. Say, you know, I've been laid up, so all I've been doing is listening to the radio or watching television. And yesterday shocked me, listening to who's on the ballot in Michigan. I heard a number of people say that only Hillary was on the ballot, and then others were saying that Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel were also on the ballot.
And Chris Dodd.
Well, I didn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah, he is. I've seen the ballot, yeah.
Okay. And then one of them actually was Lou Dobbs that said that only Hillary was on the ballot. And this shocked me, but there were a number of people throughout the day that were saying that.
Yeah.
And I think it's also curious that they put Dennis and Mike Gravel on the ballot with Hillary, because that's almost like saying, well, for the most part, Hillary will win.
Well, it's not a they put. The way it worked was the Democratic Party of Michigan asked the individual Democratic nominees not to put their names on the ballot.
Right.
At least this is my understanding of how it all played out.
Yeah, I remember.
And so Barack Obama said, okay, I won't do it. John Edwards said, I won't do it. And there is some confusion about whether Dennis Kucinich said he wouldn't do it or not. But the same with Hillary. But nonetheless, Edwards and Obama successfully got their names taken off the ballot in compliance with what the Democratic Party of Michigan wanted. And Hillary Clinton and Mike Gravel and Chris Dodd and Dennis Kucinich are on the ballot.
Well, what is interesting to me also is on the ballot they say, you know, write-in, but write-in means that you're going to get your ballot trashed.
Right. It doesn't say that, actually. It just says write-in.
It doesn't say that. But who is responsible for putting in the write-in when it's not even valid, not even going to be recognized?
Right. That would be the Secretary of State, I would guess. But
is that a Republican or a Democrat?
I don't know. I would guess that it's probably a Democrat. I believe that Michigan has a Democratic governor, but I'm not that intimately familiar with Michigan politics that I know, Sheila, the details of how that happened. Perhaps somebody will let us know. In fact, here's Patty in Michigan. Thanks for the call. Patty, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I so appreciate your show. But that's what I wanted to point out to your listeners, too, that I've been to vote, and I pointed out to my precinct captain, nowhere on that ballot did it say it wasn't going to count. And that I had contacted Congressman Conyers' office yesterday over another issue of receiving all these phone calls that the Democrats didn't even have a primary today, and all the reasons I should vote for the other three candidates, and they were all separate calls. Mm. And the worst one being yesterday afternoon saying flat out, because you do not have a primary as a Democrat, what would be your next choice? And they gave me three choices. I went to the fourth choice, undecided. And right away it went right into the Al-Qaeda spiel about why I should vote for John McCain.
Oh, interesting.
At that point, it really angered me. So then, first time in my life, I called my congressman, Congressman Conyers, and they were very interested and took down all the information. And then I called my township office this morning, which... they were not interested in all.
So McCain is out there. Are you registered as a Democrat?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so McCain is calling, and those phone numbers, those mailing lists, as it were, are easily available. So McCain is doing push polls to registered Democrats, asking them to vote for him. I know that Huckabee has reached out and said he'd like Democrats to vote for him. I don't know if he's doing.
Well,
push
all three
polls
of them, yes, because I got the one from Huckabee also through Common Sense Issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they say at the end they're not a party affiliated, they don't support a candidate,
right.
But then they gave me all the reasons why I should vote for McCain. Now, Romney's four calls, this has all happened since Saturday, Romney's four calls were more slick, you know, which sort of fits a persona.
Yeah.
Because your vote isn't going to count Tuesday, we'd like you to consider Romney.
Interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
Now, the one, though, from that pushed me, was trying to push me towards McCain, didn't identify any group, didn't say they were affiliated with him. But my point was, too, all right, say, for example, McCain isn't behind this. I, as a candidate, would want to know if somebody was out there doing it.
Yeah, because they do have to identify it at the end.
And
that's very
why I called my congressman's office, you know, Congressman Conyers. But it's just, you know, when I inquired about that, Congressman Conyers' office said that the precinct workers should alert people to that. Now, I don't know if they have a responsibility to do that or not.
You mean to the fact that if you vote the write-in, it'll delete
correct.
Your ballot? Yeah.
Right. So I brought it to my precinct captain's attention, and he said he would. I don't know if they will.
Yeah, he should be able to say that. Because there are people within the party and there are partisans who are asking people to vote uncommitted, I doubt that a precinct captain could recommend that you vote
uncommitted.
That's
what I thought.
But certainly that you would think that they can and should be able to point out that that if you vote a write-in candidate, you're going to spoil your ballot. I'm curious, Patty, who is the Secretary of State of Michigan and what party is that person representing? Do you know? Sorry for the civics test.
I can picture her face. She's a Republican.
Oh, she's a Republican. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the power, you know, I was trying to make is that up until, I guess what's kind of scary about this is up until about 5 o'clock yesterday, I was going to go uncommitted. Well, when I got that last phone call, it pushed me over the edge, and I just wanted to say a big thank you to Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I voted today.
So you voted for Dennis Kucinich?
Yes.
I have a feeling, you know, I know Randy Rhodes yesterday was strongly suggesting that people vote for Dennis Kucinich.
Oh, was she? I didn't get
to
catch
yeah,
it.
And I have a feeling that, you know, and if he's, the conventional wisdom is if he can pull 15%, that'll be perceived as a huge win for him. Whereas if Hillary gets anything less than 60%, that'll be viewed as a slight loss. Anything less than 50% will be viewed as a huge loss. If she gets over 60%, it'll be viewed as a huge win. Even though none of this counts, there is, you know, the psychological consequence.
Exactly. I was hoping for 10% for Kucinich. Maybe somebody would pay attention. This isn't a two-horse race.
Yeah.
And I just wanted other, you know, Democrats and independents out there because twice, you know, today again, I called Congressman Conyers' office, you know, twice in my whole life, and I've called 2 days in a row to let him know that even at 1 o'clock today, CNN is still saying that Hillary's the only one on the ballot.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, well, what's the point in showing up?
Well, yeah, and for that, you know, you should call CNN too and let them know. Patty, I got to move along. Terry Lynn Land,
I believe, is
the Secretary of State in Michigan, and she is a Republican. Thank you so much
for what you do, Tom.
You're welcome, Patty, and thanks so much for listening. Much appreciated. Dennis in Detroit. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to add to that caller before the break that was talking about Joe Lieberman stumping for John McCain at the auto show.
Yeah.
About a half an hour ago, I got a phone call, and it was Joe Lieberman. And he was asking that...
An automated Joe Lieberman.
It was live. But, yeah, automated Joe Lieberman that asked that people, including Democrats, vote for John McCain.
Incredible.
So I would just say that that indicates probably if John McCain is the nominee, you're going to see a John McCain-Lieberman ticket.
Yep, I'll bet that deal has already been cut. Dennis, thank you very much for the heads up on that. Julie in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Hey, Julie.
Hi. Well, we Democrats here in Michigan are very cranky today.
I can understand it.
Very, very cranky. But this guy just reminded me. It's worse than that with Lieberman. Ox News, as I call them, since they don't understand the word democratic, so I take off the F on their names. So I call them Ox News.
Sorry. That's quite all right.
At any rate, he was giving speeches. He was just giving a speech. They just broadcast the whole...
Who's the he you're talking about? Lieberman?
First of all, yes, Lieberman and then McCain. They broadcast the whole thing of their speeches.
Oh, my.
And I have to tell you something. I'm one of those extremely angry ones. I wanted to vote for John Edwards. Everyone, all these people had to rush back as Terry Land is the state Republican state secretary, obviously Republican. You know, they could care less about the Constitution and liberty and laws. So they, of course, always use them excuses to steal our liberties and, you know, break all the laws. But
I'm sorry, I'm getting a little excited.
No,
here.
It's quite all right, Julie.
At any rate, because Edwards and Obama and, you know, everyone else aren't on the ticket, I actually voted for Hillary Clinton because my attitude is, you know what, we have had the worst economy in the nation since 2000. We're talking almost 8 years now.
Yep.
No one seems to care less. And my attitude is, you know what, if you don't want to play, you don't get to win.
Yeah.
And I wanted to vote for Edwards. Everyone I know wants to vote for Edwards. I have so many people who had to go back and get new ballots, write in ballots, because of the fact they found out it wouldn't count, but you wouldn't know that thanks to the Republican Secretary of State.
Right, right.
So at any rate.
So, well, good on you for voting, Julie. You know, good on you for voting. I agree. It's at least participate in the process. It's a good one. We're going to do our the Tom Hartman Program Progressive Straw Poll during the next segment. Right after this break, we're going to be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Lauren's going to go through and clear the board. You will just hear the phone ring. I'll put you on the air. I'll call out your area code, and you tell us who, if the vote was held today, who you would vote for, wherever you are in the country.
The Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Let me take you to the, I wanna take you there.
Welcome back, 9.5 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. America's antidote to Rush Limbaugh. What can you say? Okay, we're going to do our progressive straw poll here, the Tom Hartman Program straw poll. When you call, you will simply hear the phone ring and ring and ring. When it stops ringing, you'll hear a click, and you will be on the air. I will call out your area code, and you simply tell us who you would vote for in the Democratic primary, or if it were held today, or if you want to vote for a Republican, you can do that too. This isn't just Michigan. This is just our, let's get a sense of what's going on in the nation. So, area code 303, who would you vote for today?
Hello.
Hi, who would you vote for if the election were held today?
Oh, Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 510, your vote for today?
Barack Obama.
Thank you. Area code 626, for whom would you vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. Area code 425, who would you vote for today?
I'd vote for Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 408, who would you vote for if the election were held today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 562, who would you vote for if it were today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 206, your vote today?
Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. Area code 631, your vote today?
Kucinich all the way.
Okay, thank you. Area code 503, your vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Area 214, your vote today?
Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. Area 503, your vote today? Area 503, who would you vote for today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 559, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 206, your vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code, another area code 206, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 724, your vote today?
President Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 909, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 646, your vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 415, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area 703, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 503, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 605, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 720, your vote today?
Yeah, Edwards, Kucinich, and Clinton, okay. No way.
Okay, we'll count that as we're just taking a single vote. Area code 503, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 505, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 618, your vote today? 618, your vote?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 206, your vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Area 408, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 805, your vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 212, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 360, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area 646, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area 805, your vote today?
Obama.
Thank you. Area code 818, your vote today.
Barack Obama.
Thank you. Area 646, your vote today.
Edwards.
Thank you. I've got some blocked numbers here. This is area code 303, your vote today. 303, your vote? Hello?
John.
Okay. I don't have a number for you here, your blocked number. Who would you vote for today?
610, Obama.
Thank you very much. And let's see, this your number is also blocked. Who would you vote for today?
Area code 818, Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. Area code 336, you would vote for today?
Edwards.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely. Thank you. Area code 510, your vote today?
I've already voted for Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. Area code 734, your vote today?
Detroit.
Yeah, 734, your
Detroit
vote?
Detroit is for Edwards.
For Edwards, thank you. Area code 623, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 714, your vote today?
Barack Obama.
Thank you very much. Area code 313, your vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you very much. Area code 253, your vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. Our number, by the way, 866-303-2270. And area code 303, your vote today?
Nader.
Nader, okay, thank you. Area code 206, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you very much. I don't know your, I can't see your number here. Your vote today?
503, Christopher Walken.
Thank you. Okay. Area code 973, your vote today?
Clinton.
Thank you for Hillary Clinton. Area code 310, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 734, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 602, your vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 408, your vote today?
For Hillary Clinton.
Thank you. Area 707, your vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 201, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 303, your vote today?
Clinton.
Thank you. Area code 714, your vote today? Area code 714, your vote?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 253, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 406, your vote today?
Ron Paul.
Thank you. Area code 425, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 541, your vote today?
It would be Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 206, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. I'm sorry. It just vanished here. Area code 212, your vote today?
Edwards.
Thank you. Here's an unknown one. Your vote today?
Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 360, your vote today?
Al Gore and then Edwards.
Thank you. Al Gore will count that as. Area code 212, your vote today?
John Edwards.
Thank you. Area code 708, your vote today?
Edwards.
Area code 303, your vote today?
Vote today would be Barack Obama.
Thank you. Area code 909, your vote today?
It would be for Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 847, your vote today?
Excuse me?
For whom would you vote today?
Kucinich.
Thank you. Area code 650, your vote today?
For Howard Dean.
For Howard Dean. Interesting. Area code 201, who would you vote for today?
Edwards.
Okay. Blank call, who would you vote for today? Oh, area code 718, who would you vote for today?
John Edwards.
Okay. Here's a blanked number. Oops, they keep vanishing here. Hey, for whom would you vote today?
415, Obama.
Thank you. And area code 425, your vote today?
Edwards.
Okay, and area code 305, your last vote today. Your vote?
Yes, Kucinich.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. The Tom Hartman Program. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, in the last segment of the last hour, we spent about 5 minutes just taking calls in absolute order, the order that they're coming in, and just popping people on the air and saying, who would you vote for if the election were held today? And here's how it broke out. Louise is putting it up on our website right now. It should be there probably within the next 5 minutes or so. John Edwards won our straw poll with 40 votes, followed by Dennis Kucinich with 18 votes, followed by Barack Obama with 7 votes,
followed by Hillary Clinton with 5 votes. And then there was 1 vote each for Ralph Nader, Ron Paul, Al Gore, Howard Dean, and Christopher Walken. So 40 votes for Edwards, 18 for Kucinich, 7 for Obama, 5 for Clinton. I think those are the you know, really and truly significant numbers. So anyhow, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Your thoughts on this and on the primary, on the election. I think I've made my thoughts pretty clear up to this point. Scott, Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Great show today.
Thank
Wanted
you.
To make a few comments and hear your thoughts and feedback with the latest issue in Nevada with the caucus, which you're aware the DNC back in March sought to have Nevada become of greater consequence to the process and in moving them up in terms of the timing of the primaries and the caucus season. And as a part of the special circumstance which Nevada finds itself in with the Strip and a lot of folks, a dense population of people that work on the Strip, and they created 9 caucus sites. And as hopefully all the listeners are aware, the NSEA, which is the Nevada State Education...
the teachers' union.
Right.
Yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, and Bill Clinton actually came out in support of it as well. Katrina VandenHeuvel has documented this, that they support this effort. And really, what I'm speaking to and what I'd like to hear you comment on is the utter hypocrisy of the Clintons and not...
You mean in trying to block the at-large
caucuses? In the suppression of,
caucuses.
You know, just the general tone of this whole effort. And
well, the problem is that the area, I mean, for them, looking at it from their point of view, is that those at-large caucuses are going to be held in the belly of the beast, as it were. I mean, you know, in the guts of the Strip of the union that has just given its endorsement to Barack Obama.
Well,
and
I,
so
I
you know, I see this as just a pretty nakedly partisan is probably the wrong word because it's all within the Democratic Party, but whatever the word would be, political maneuver.
Well, and on any other day of the week, I would agree with you. And just as a political move, it's understandable to a lesser degree. However, at a time where this event is juxtaposed right around the corner from when Hillary Clinton would like to wrap herself in the warm embrace of Dr. Martin Luther King and everything that man and that movement stood for, to be part and parcel to any effort that would suppress one single vote.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone, 9 caucus sites that, by the way, when the DNC, you know, felt that Hillary was inevitable and Barack, the likes of Barack Obama weren't even being accounted for. By the way, when this is all over and Hillary Clinton gets back to the Senate floor, I doubt very much that we'll see her introduce any kind of initiative to celebrate Lyndon Baines Johnson Day. By the way, today is Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah,
let
is.
Us not forget that.
Yeah, Scott, thank you very much. Well said. And it being today being the actual birthday of Martin Luther King, I'd like to share with you just it's short. It's just a minute. The one of my very favorite comments of Martin Luther King. Partly, it's my favorite for a whole variety of reasons, and I probably don't even need and shouldn't even explain them. I'll just let it stand on its own. This is Martin Luther King talking about how the word maladjusted had been used against him, frankly, at the time, and has been against so many other people over the years, and what his take on that.
Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. It is the ringing cry of modern child psychology, maladjusted. Now, of course, we all want to live the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But as I move toward my conclusion, I would like to say to you today, in a very honest manner, that there are some things in our society and some things in our world for which I'm proud to be maladjusted, And I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted to these things until the good society is realized. I must honestly say to you that I never intend to adjust myself to racial segregation and discrimination. I never intend to adjust myself to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few, leave millions of God's children smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society.
There you go, Martin Luther King on maladjustment. Kathy in Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Kathy, my hometown. What's up?
Hi. I'm trying to get my mind around this. Every time you run a poll.
And we've been doing this for, I think, five months now.
And I listen to everyone. I listen to you every day. And it's like John Edwards wins most of the time.
Every single time he has won.
Every single time.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get my mind around, and my friends, when we talk about it, we're all for John Edwards. And yet we've all said the same thing. He's not even in the running. He doesn't get publicity. It's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, in the states, when I was in New Hampshire, or if you go back and you look at Iowa, in those states where he's on the ground and he's doing retail politics, he is a serious contender. I mean, he's there. There are three candidates who are fighting it out. And Edwards and Obama, by and large, are splitting the anti-Hillary vote in addition to the other dynamics that are there. The problem is that because the corporate media in the United States absolutely hates John Edwards's anti-corporate message. He makes no bones about it. I mean, he is literally the candidate that they are afraid of, and the corporate media in the United States is afraid of. Because of that, they just essentially don't cover him. I mean, you know, there's because he's not getting the national public, it's like Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani was this huge Republican front runner. Because for a whole year he got hyped. Hillary Clinton for 2 years, 3 years has been hyped as the inevitable candidate. I mean, you had all these Republicans out there, you know, Fox News and everybody talking about how it's going to be Hillary. And John Edwards is simply not getting that national publicity. There has been, for all practical purposes, a blackout, a national publicity blackout. The national press, the corporate press, the press owned by large multinational corporations that a populist president would probably break up using the Sherman Antitrust Act, that press, it wants it to be a two-person race between two people who are not going to take on big corporate interests, in my opinion.
Exactly. And that means that we are not voting. We are not really voting for a president. They're telling us who we can vote for. You can have this one or you can have this one.
Well, except in the individual states. I mean, if you look in the polling in Nevada, for example, John Edwards it's a dead heat between Edwards, Obama, and Clinton. So in those states and those places where, you know, you actually have an opportunity for the debate to be engaged, then, you know, he's okay. He's doing okay.
Do you think, other than my bumper stickers and all this kind of stuff, that there's anything that on my level we can do other than bumper stickers, send money, chat with all your friends?
Well, I think, you know, that those are the things that I've been doing. And ultimately, whoever the candidate is, and because it may be that, you know, we've gotten so far that when a few half a dozen pundits, you know, when the Chris Matthews's of the world essentially declare it a two-person race and say, you know, and just start freezing candidates out, and obviously they've done that a long time ago with the smaller the less well-known or the less popular candidates, the Ron Pauls, the Dennis Kucinich's. I couldn't figure out why Joe Biden didn't get a lot more press, because, you know, he even voted for the Bankruptcy Act. I thought the corporations would love him. But, we have to get involved. We have to get active. We have to put pressure on whoever the candidate is. But over the short term, I still think John Edwards has a very good chance of ending up the nominee of the party.
Well, we'll keep fighting.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. I see Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton right now beating each other up so badly. I think a lot of people are just going to say, yeah, I'm going to walk away from both of them, which leaves John Edwards the last man standing, 16 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. In our first hour of this program, we had Jonah Goldberg on, about his book, Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left from Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning. And he essentially argued that syndicalism, that this worker-owned businesses was the left's version of fascism and was a great threat to America. And I want to get on the other side of the story here before the day is out. I think this is really important. Roberta McDonald is with us. She is the senior vice president of the marketing of marketing for the Cabot Creamery Co-op. The website go.coop, go.coop, like go.coop. And Roberta, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Glad to have you with us.
Well, it's an interesting place to fall in behind in your conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if you heard that first hour, but it was he's got this new book out called Liberal Fascism, The Secret History of the American Left from Mussolini to the Politics of Meaning. And he suggests, and I go to your website, go.coop, and clip, for example, one of the little blocks that I can click on takes me to the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives,
yeah,
which is right at the top of what I would assume John Goldberg was talking about when he was talking about liberal fascism. But it seems to me like this is the essence of democracy, having workers have a say in and have ownership of the businesses that they're participating in.
Well, it is the essence. Democracy is the right comparison. Too often I think cooperative sounds like it's some communist plot, and I wish I could scrub that out of people's impressions. But if the owners stand to make the profit, I think the work effort and the productivity is naturally much more at a higher rate. So
yeah, I see this long list: the Alvarado Street Bakery in California, the Black Street Star Co-op in Texas, the Brattleboro Tech Collective in Vermont, the Builders Commonwealth in Minnesota. Tell me some story, and of course, marketing at Cabot Creamery. Tell me a story about, you know, make this real for me.
About
listeners.
Being a cooperative, or
yeah, about how a co-op works. You know, what does it mean?
Well, whether it's a credit union or a purchasing cooperative, and I think most people don't realize there's probably about 128 million members in the country, and I don't even think most of the members know they are members of cooperatives. But for us, it means a transparency in the leadership. You don't, in our case with Cabot, it's 1,400 farm families that sink or swim. They have a stake in their own future. They're not waiting for federal programs. They have to live with the pricing policy. But in fact, all the profit, everything I do and the people I work with, is to sell their cheese. And as a result, any profit on that, any, goes right back to the farm families based on how much milk they ship. So in my own limited experience, from a work point of view, it makes the most sense. It isn't going to a publicly traded company.
Right, right. And how the history of co-ops here in the United States, just over the last 50, 80 years or so.
Well, it started out of need, Tom. There, mm-hmm. You know, who was going to get electricity or rather power to the rural America, and what were farmers going to do? Where the land was not the market. So
did this come out of like the Grange movement in the 1870s?
That I don't know. It sounds
okay.
Logical.
Yeah.
I only know what the 20th century, and in that case, it really was America trying to, you know, the whole roads, transportation, as we try to get food back to the main markets, who was going to provide it and with what power.
Mm-hmm.
And from that sprang co-ops out of need, but now cooperatives represent startling alternatives. You think of Yaya Bike, so I think they recently went through another name change, so forgive me, it's on the tip of my tongue, but you as a bike retailer in downtown, you know, crippled downtowns competing with big box stores can pretend that they're actually in this unit of 200 instead of just that one bike store and bike and purchase together. Dunkin' Donuts is a cooperative, and most people don't realize that.
I didn't know that. I thought it was a franchise.
Well, but they're purchasing their goods. The way they can keep prices down is through a cooperative structure. Credit unions are cooperatives, and most people don't realize that. It's why there, if you got a credit card through a credit union versus some of the better known banks, why is that rate half? Why is that interest rate half? And the reason is because that profit is going back to the members.
It's because you don't have some CEO pulling off a $300 million a year paycheck, and you don't have dividends being paid to stockholders.
Most often, the latter. I think most banks probably aren't the most overpaid. I don't know pay rates, but pay rates are pay rates, and they're competitive, and they're screwy in a lot of cases as far as I'm concerned. But I can say that the profits go back to the members. That I know.
This essentially is not capitalism, is it? It's free enterprise.
It's free enterprise in the highest sense. In fact, you would think it is, to me, it's absolutely the better business model. I'm absolutely crazed on this subject,
mm-hmm.
that we as a government overseas appreciate what cooperatives do in terms of stabilizing regions by affording sort of an economic treaty, if you will. The poor are afforded farm tools and the like, and form cooperatives, say, to grow coffee and then sell that to somebody else. But here domestically in the United States, cooperatives are the better business model, should be taught in business school.
I agree. It should be taught in our high schools and junior high schools as well. You can learn all about it by www.gogo.coop. That
co-op.
Actually is a domain. Yeah, go.coop. And Roberta McDonald, the Vice President of Marketing, Senior Vice President of Marketing, Cabot Creamery. Thank you, Roberta, for sharing this.
I really appreciate the time.
Sure. Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Eric Barron is on the line with us. He's the publisher of the website, the blog, MichiganLiberal.com. MichiganLiberal.com, very easy to find. Just type in those words, and there it is. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi.
So just great. So how's everything going in Michigan today? What's the word on the ground?
Splendid, cold, snowy, and gray.
Okay.
We're hearing a lot of mixed results from around the state on how the balloting is going, how people are turning out, and stuff like that. I am getting reports that there are mobs of Ron Paul folks out on the streets waving flags and holding.
I was seeing that in New Hampshire. You couldn't go three blocks without seeing a whole bunch of Ron Paul, basically youngsters. I mean, people in many cases, 13, 15 years old. More often, though, high school age kids and early college age kids. And the interesting thing was when you asked them why they supported Ron Paul, they would say, oh, because he tells the truth, he wants to end the war. And you say, but he wants to do away with public education, and he wants to do, publicly funded education. He wants to do away with Social Security. He doesn't think he should have the right to unionize and force your employer to have to bargain with you. And they go, oh, no, that can't be right. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So the Ron Paul people are out in numbers, and somebody sent me a PDF of their ballot, presumably the absentee ballot. It had Chris Dodd on it. Somebody else called into the program and said that they voted today and didn't see Chris Dodd on the ballot. Who's on the final ballot here when you show up in one of the polling places today, and who isn't? And are these votes in Michigan being recorded by and large on electronic voting machines or in paper? And what kind of turnout? What's these kind of details? Give us some information here, Eric.
Well, first of all, I actually crossed over party lines today and to do some political mischief, and I voted on the Republican ballot. But I did hear the woman at the polling place. I live in a predominantly Democratic precinct. Telling people they weren't allowed to vote for or to write in candidates.
Right.
And we did a paper ballot. Michigan is in the middle of transitioning from paper ballots to electronic voting machines. And my precinct, my city, was still using paper ballots today.
Mm-hmm.
And turnout was surprisingly high. I got to the polling place, and there was actually a line of people getting ready to cast their votes. I was shocked. I figured I would show up and be like the only person in the entire room for the entire time I was there.
Yeah. Now, you said you involved yourself in some political mischief. I assume then that you're going along with Marcos's suggestion that a vote for Mitt Romney is a vote to keep the circular firing squad in the Republican Party going.
No, actually, I voted. I actually did pull the lever for Ron Paul today.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Ron Paul has a lot of supporters here in Michigan.
Yep.
It's kind of a dedicated group of people, and they are, active, and it's a demographic that I think he can do strongly in, and I think that come November, if we can encourage him to do a third-party run, that, you know, the Libertarian candidate, he could actually help cost the Republican nominee the election here in Michigan.
Well, you know, that's the exact strategy that the Republicans used in Michigan. Michigan was the place where they made it happen to put George Wallace on the ballot, and that ultimately led to a third party run by George Wallace, if my memory is correct.
That's correct, and it's almost a tradition here in Michigan. You know, you talk to some of the political leaders, and you know, they're all like, you know, we want to do a closed caucus or a closed primary or change the system, but they never seem to be able to get it done. And, you know, back in 2000, Michigan Democrats crossed party lines and helped give the state to McCain. I mean, I know coming out of New Hampshire, everybody was talking about McCain's win here in 2000, but that was not actually possible without a great deal of mischief from Michigan Democrats. Before, you know, the governor at the time, who was widely hated in this state, just absolutely loathed by the Democratic Party and progressives, declared Michigan to be George Bush's firewall, and people just kind of took that as a call to action, came out and humiliated him on the national stage. And back in 98, Republicans crossed over and put Jeffrey Feiger, you know, Jack Kevorkian's old lawyer, on the November ballot against John Engler. So, you know, we have a long tradition to
make sure that John Engler, the Republican, would become the governor.
Right, and that's what led us to 2000, and you know, the state's Democrats returned the favor by, you know, thumbing their noses at him and destroying his firewall.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking with Eric Barron.
Yeah.
Eric Barron, who is the publisher, the editor, the chief cook and bottle washer over at MichiganLiberal.com. Eric, I got a call here. It's some interesting calls. Susan in Michigan, if I can just put you on with Eric. Susan,
okay.
you're getting some phone calls.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting a lot of phone calls.
Okay. You live where?
I live in Clinton Township,
mm-hmm.
Which is in the northeast suburbs of Detroit. I live in a very Republican neighborhood. When we were building here, it was full of Bush-Cheney signs. It was kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. But are you registered as a Democrat?
I'm registered as a Democrat. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those Democrats that crossed party lines to vote for McCain in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Our House has voted across party lines before for good candidates, and then, you know, in the last several elections, we don't do that. My husband actually today cast his vote for Ron Paul, somewhat in your tradition, Eric. I cast my vote for Dennis Kucinich because the Metro Times actually wrote a really compelling article about, if progressives want the party to pay attention to a progressive agenda, vote for Kucinich, because it sounded like they would have endorsed Edwards had he been on the ballot, but, you know, obviously they couldn't. And the most interesting phone call that I got was John McCain's recorded voice talking about his being able to protect the country against Islamofascists. We have friends who are Arab, Chaldean and Sunni and Shiite, that live in Macomb County, which is the county I'm in as well, in Sterling Heights, which has a large population of Arabs. Their phone call omits that sentence, and I thought that was interesting. And then today, Joe Lieberman called his little recorded message to remind us that he was the Democratic candidate and that we should, because we don't have a Democratic primary that's going to be valid, to go ahead and vote for John McCain. Lieberman, McCain running together is just too scary for words.
Amazing. Susan, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Thanks, and thanks, Tom. I have to tell you, I started listening to you because my 76-year-old mother turned me on to you. She and my 13-year-old and I vigil with a group against the war. We've learned so much from you. Thank you so much for your show.
Well, thank you, Susan. Thank you for your kind words, and thanks for getting out there and being active and sharing with us what's going on.
Okay.
So, Eric.
Yeah,
thank you very much. And by the way, the results of our straw poll should be up on our website now at tomhartman.com. So, Eric Barron, MichiganLiberal.com, thoughts on Susan's experience?
Excuse me. Well, you know, I got a robocall the other day at work. Hello?
Yeah, you're still on.
Okay. I got a robocall the other day at work. Mostly what we're getting up here are Mike Huckabee phone calls. I received the same one at work 2 days in a row.
That's interesting. Where are you located, Mike or Eric?
I live in the city of Mount Pleasant,
okay.
And that's about an hour north of Lansing, which mm-hmm. is the state's capital.
It's kind of central Michigan.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, you know, it's the home of Central Michigan University, as a matter of
mm-hmm.
fact. You know, it's a rural area, and I think that, you know, Mike Huckabee is, I think he's got a good shot if he can channel the people from this part of the state into, you know, voting for him. I think he's got, you know, I'm not going to make a prediction, but I think that, you know, if Mike Huckabee had spent more time here, I think that he would probably be considered one of the top two candidates here instead of just Mitt and John McCain.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. When you showed up at the polls and you said you were surprised to see that, you know, people were lining up to vote, was it mostly Republicans or were Democrats showing up as well?
There were a lot of it looked like it was kind of mixed. Like I kind of you know, cast my eye down on the voter rolls when the election worker was looking through it just so I could, you know, just kind of see what was going on. And it looked like it was probably mixed. And the guy in front of me got a Republican ballot. And he looked like. I would suspect that I think he was probably voting for Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
There were some people who followed me. I saw a member of the city commission who's a registered Democrat and a donor to the Democratic Party. So I think it was a mix, and it was probably leaning a little heavily towards the Democratic ballot because that's, you know, this is a Democratic part of town and kind of a purple county.
Right. So we're talking with Eric Barron. He publishes the progressive blog MichiganLiberal.com. And Eric, the situation in Michigan with the possibility of delegates being seated. I've heard three different stories now. One that John Dingell's wife was very involved with this. Another that Carl Levin was or Sandra Levin or no Carl Levin was very involved with it. Another that whoever was involved with it is saying that yeah, there's a possibility our delegates will get seated. Others that not a chance. What's the inside skinny here?
Most of us think, you know, and Michigan moved its primary election up from February 5th, I think it was scheduled for, to January 15th because they wanted to make Michigan relevant in the nominating process. Right. And, you know, Carl Levin was big on that. He wants to get somebody other than New Hampshire and Iowa in the, you know, the first tier of states.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Dingell, who John Dingell's wife, was big on that. And...
So do you think that is there any chance that the Michigan delegates will be seated?
I think the National Party will eventually seat those delegates because Michigan is critical of the Democratic chance of winning the White House in November.
I'm inclined to agree with you. Eric Barron, MichiganLiberal.com, the website. Eric, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
Helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Celeste Whiting is going to be with us in just a second, but before I bring her on, or actually, Celeste, welcome to the program, first of all. Let me just get you in here.
Thank you.
Hey, Celeste is a blogger in Michigan. Her blog is the Our Michigan blog over at ourmichigan.blogspot.com. And a great summary that you have right up on your homepage. May I bring a couple of callers in and let's mix this up a little bit here?
You bet.
Thank you. Diane in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. You're on the air. Hey, Diane.
Hi. I haven't a clue what to do with today's primary. And people I know, just they don't have, if they're an Edwards supporter or Obama supporter, they just have no idea what the right thing to do is.
So the question is, if you want to vote for Edwards or if you want to vote for Obama, who should you vote for? Okay, let me thank you, Diane, for that. Let me share my take on this, and then, Celeste, I'd like to get yours. My take is that if you're an Edwards supporter, you should vote uncommitted, because I think that there is a very real possibility that the Democratic Party eventually will seat the Michigan delegates, and the uncommitted delegates will then be able to vote whoever, for whomever, you know,
they're going to be voting for, and they won't be Hillary Clinton delegates. On the other hand, you say, well, Dennis Kucinich is the most progressive guy. Vote for him if you would otherwise support Edwards, except that in Iowa, Dennis Kucinich told his supporters to caucus for Obama, who is in favor of nuclear power and who's talking about Social Security is going to go bankrupt and all, you know, so many of these. And as Paul Krugman pointed out yesterday in the New York Times, is nowhere near as progressive as either Hillary Clinton or John Edwards on most economic issues. And so I would say that a vote for Kucinich right now, in addition to, you know, possibly you could make Dennis Kucinich a kingmaker, but if history is future, you'll make him a kingmaker on behalf of Barack Obama, and that would not be a vote for Edwards. Celeste, how's my logic on this?
Well, I don't know how your logic is on this, because I just don't know how a brokered convention would play out. What I've heard is that Edwards is more likely to be a kingmaker should that happen. And I could also tell you from my going around to various polling places today, talking to people in Willow Run in particular, people there seem to understand what an uncommitted vote meant, and that is it meant that they understood it to mean I'm a supporter of someone other than Hillary Clinton or a named candidate on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all very clear about that. Interestingly, there were mostly uncommitted voters that I talked to. I didn't encounter a single Hillary Clinton voter, at least with the people in Willow Run that I spoke with. And you, being a Michigan person,
yeah,
know the significance of Willow Run.
Oh yeah,
in our manufacturing history. So a lot of those people were very upset about the economy, very angry at the Democrats for not campaigning in Michigan, regardless of the rules. People here that I spoke with just felt really kind of dissed, if it were.
Yeah, but you were basically not able to find Hillary Clinton votes? Is that
informal
exit poll, as it were?
Not in Willow Run, and I don't know that I would have expected to see them there, but also...
Well, Willow Run is that's as blue-collar as you can get. I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
That's the Willow Run plant, and we just did a straw poll where we just had people call in, and of course, these are listeners to my program, but and so they may, to some extent, reflect my bias. On the other hand... There's not like, 20 or 30 progressive talk shows out there in this day period. And for most people, I think, frankly, this reflects reality. But we had John Edwards had 40 votes. Kucinich had 18. Obama had 7. Clinton had 5.
Right.
Everybody else was 1.
Right. So. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how in Michigan that kind of populist gap plays out. I know there was some effort on the part of Huckabee to kind of claim that mantle as he was campaigning here.
Yeah, yeah, and he is continuing to. What is your sense of how things are going for both the Democrats and the Republicans as we wrap up the day here in Michigan? It's almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I don't have a sense. I'm sorry. I hope you weren't expecting me to be.
No, I'm not. That's fine. I'm just curious if you had
one. What surprised me, and as I said, I mean, I made it a point to visit a place in Ann Arbor, which, as you know, has a reputation for being sort of sheltered from the worst of the economic situation. And I went to Willow Run, which is in really sad shape. And in both places, I found uncommitted voters.
Yeah, and that's most of the Democrats who have been calling into this program from Michigan have been saying that they believe that the best way to vote in Michigan is to vote uncommitted.
Right.
I'm inclined to agree with that. I know I disagree with some of my colleagues on this, but I'm inclined to agree with that. So, Lee in Duval, Washington, in fact, disagrees with us on this. So, Lee, we've got about a minute before the end of the show. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't like all the political calculus. I think you should run to the light, man. Go to the best one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been listening to you, Tom, maybe for three and a half years whenever you came on in Seattle. And I could have swore that Dennis Kucinich is the best candidate and embodies your worldview, which also parallels my worldview.
He does, and he did for me until in Iowa he told his delegates to go with Barack Obama. And at that point, he lost me.
Well, then play the algebra and cancel that out with Edwards' vote on the war. I mean, that was 2003. We already knew all about George Bush by then. That was really bad. Now,
I think he's repented from that. I haven't heard a rational explanation from Dennis Kucinich about why he told his delegates to go for Barack Obama.
I'm not saying Edwards is bad. He's a great candidate. I have no problem for him. But when you, a person with your influence, turn so many people. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy and say, well, Dennis Kucinich can't get elected, so let's go for Edwards.
Yeah.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's, Lee, I wish I had that kind of power, but I guarantee you I don't. Celeste Whiting, any final thoughts real quickly?
Yeah, I think if uncommitted polls strongly in Michigan, I think the neck-and-neck in race in Nevada becomes very interesting.
Yeah, and I think it also dramatically increases the probability that the Michigan delegates will be seated.
Yes.
And ultimately have some say in who gets elected, who is our nominee here. OurMichigan.blogspot.com is Celeste's website. Check it out. It's great. Celeste, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
57 minutes past the hour. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.